This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yes, 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 yes. We are back with another episode of A Good Cry. It's your close personal friend, Michael Cruz Kane. And this is episode number question mark. I honestly have no idea, but I'm having the time of my life slash death, I guess, doing this. And I appreciate all of you for listening, etc. Grief thoughts for today. I am thinking about what other kinds of grief are there that we can talk about on this podcast. We talk about death of a parent, and obviously every one of those is different. And we've talked about death of a sibling, and those are all obviously different as well. But there are other types of grief I would like to get into. Last episode, we talked with Caitlin Doty about funerals. And this week, our guest is Dave Schilling. And he talks, in addition to the death of his dad, he also talks about the grief of divorce, which is a new one for the podcast. And it was a privilege and honor to talk to Dave because he is a brilliant and sensitive and funny and nice dude. And we get into stuff that we had never talked about before. And the idea of having grief that pertains to someone who is still alive is unique to this episode for me. I'm sure other people have talked about it tons before, but we haven't talked about it on this podcast before. And it's a pleasure, and I love it. And I hope that you love it, keeping it short and sweet today. But remember two things. One, what kind of grief do you want to hear about? Message me, I'm curious. And two, that you are loved very much in this world. I said it laughing, but I meant it. Okay, this is Dave Schilling and A Good Cry. Thanks for listening. This is the podcast now, Dave. Now we're in it. Everything you say from here forward.
Oh, God. Ah!
What were you doing? You can do what you needed to do. It doesn't matter.
Looking at porn. Come on. No, I'm just kidding. I was looking at Instagram.
That's in the pod now. That's part of it.
I was like, oh, my friend's wearing a cool shirt. Oh, I'm doing a podcast? Ah, shit. All right.
If you want to do cool shirt scrolling, I endorse it completely. I love some cool shirts.
No. You have 112% of me right now.
Oh, no, that's too much.
It's going to break the system.
Dave, we kick the pod off with the question, what, Dave, is your relationship to grief? We don't say Dave every time we ask it, but this time I'm putting Dave in there.
You should start. You asked Stephen Colbert if his name was Dave. It's not Stephen.
Yeah, well, when you do the pod, everybody's a Dave.
If only the world were so sweet.
What's your relationship to grief, Dave? What's your relationship to grief?
This is a wonderful question.
Oh, thank you.
Wonderful question. I have a significant relationship to it.
Okay.
My father died when I was, 22? 2006. He had a heart attack out of nowhere. I mean, we knew he was on heart medication, but there was no indication that he was ill any more than just having kind of a rusty ticker. He died at work in front of my mother.
Oh, my gosh. I mean,
so they worked in the same office.
What sort of office?
So my mother was a social worker, and my father was like in charge of like budget analysis for her department of the human services agency in my hometown.
And where'd you grow up? Where's that?
Merced, California, home of nothing.
That's the town motto, right?
Yes. I think Janet Leigh, the actress, was from there or something.
So your dad had a heart attack in front of, like, your mother. They worked in super physically close proximity to each other? Or, like, somebody get your mom and she comes in and sees it happening?
You know, she was in a different office. They brought her in after he collapsed, and she watched him as he was dying. Like, the resuscitation process was happening. And then they called it, I think, even before he went to the hospital.
In the office. In the office. Holy shit. And you were how old did you say?
I was in my 20s. Don't make me do the math. I'm very stupid. And I also don't want people to know how old I am.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fine.
But yeah, I was in college. All I know is I was in college. I was a junior in college. I was very hungover that day. And I was like, I'm going to go into work late because I was working at the library on campus. It's like, this is not going to be a good day for me. I don't feel good. And then I got a call, a panicked phone call from my mother saying my dad was dead and that someone was coming to pick me up. And I was going back home, driving back from San Francisco to Merced to put my dad in the ground.
And do you have siblings?
Yes. Yes, I do.
How many siblings do you have?
I have one full brother and then two sets of siblings, one from each of my parents' previous marriages before they married each other.
Got it.
So I have, in total, four.
So is it everybody converging on Merced kind of like simultaneously once that happens?
Yes, yes. My uncle and his family came up from Southern California, from L.A., and my sister came from Colorado. We were there for, I think, a week. I left early. My mother still to this day is mad at me for leaving after a week. She said, I stayed home to grieve with your brother and you went back to college. And she still resents me for that.
Wow. I mean, so just to go back into that, you getting that phone call, and if you don't want to talk about this, first of all, you don't have to, but Do you remember it all? I'm sure it's a very fraught memory, but do you remember? Because I could see it being like, wait, what are you talking about? Like that, because you said you had no indication of your father being to the level of unwell or whatever that he could suddenly pass away.
Yeah.
Do you remember how you processed that phone call when it happened?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as soon as it was over, I was like, okay, I have to pack up. That's all. I didn't really like cry. Excuse me, until I saw a friend and I'd tell them, and then I started crying. And then I cried again when I got home. Because my mother, I'd never seen my mother cry in, you know, 2 decades since I'd been born. She just didn't cry. Very tough person. And so her crying made me cry. And that was sort of the beginning of, like, the process of actually accepting it. But there's, I think for a lot of people, when they get sudden bad news, they just kind of go into a routine of, like, okay, these are the practical things that have to be done in order to move forward.
Yeah.
And that's what I did for the first hour. It's just like, all right, well, I got to pack my clothes. Well, got to call somebody and tell them I'm leaving. And bye, roommates. I'm going to go home. My dad died.
You talk to yourself in like a Jim Gaffigan voice.
Yeah. Hey, you guys, Hot Pockets. I don't even know if that's Jim Gaffigan or just...
No, that is definitely Gaffigan.
Okay, good.
I saw Gaffigan not that long ago. And the crowd begged for Hot Pockets after, like, this is, you know, not that long ago. It's like a couple of years ago.
And he screamed, fuck you, and then he ran away.
The crowd was chanting for Hot Pockets after his show, and he came out and he did Hot Pockets. And I got to tell you, it was unbelievable. It's a good bit.
Oh, my God.
It's a good bit.
That's awesome. It's cool that there are still comedians who are kind of on the level of, like, a big pop band.
Like a rock band. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah, like U2, people are like, play every song from the Joshua Tree or play Mysterious Ways or whatever.
Yeah.
People don't do that as much with stand-up comedy anymore. But there are people out there like Patton Oswalt doing the Ruth's Chris Steakhouse thing and the like potato bombs and stuff. Like, that's still a thing people probably like beg him to do.
Well, you have to love a bit so much to know exactly what's coming. Like,
yeah.
So much of comedy is that, oh, I didn't expect that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know every detail of it and you're still like, man, this is really funny to me, it's a blessed bit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway, I've taken us so far off the subject. So you were saying that you went into like a routine mode. Your brain did like a downshift into a different way of being. And then you said that you cried for the first time. Did you say you saw a friend before you got home? Was there a cry in between?
Yeah, I was just like, you know, saying goodbye to people and like letting them know. And I just started crying in front of a friend when I was saying I had to leave. I don't know why it was that person, but that was it. Yeah.
You don't know why you saw that person or why you cried in front of that person?
No, I don't know why that was when I started crying. I have no clue.
Oh, interesting. I'm going to speculate about your feelings from many years ago. And you can tell me if this feels at all possible.
Okay, here we go. Yes.
But I think I would imagine saying the words out loud to somebody else is a moment where you're like, oh, this is a real thing now. Like,
yep.
I could see, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but I could see hearing this thing that seems totally unbelievable and being like, still kind of reserving a moment to be like, is this real? Mm-hmm. And then you say it out loud and it's like, now it is real. Now I have said this and now I'm going to be saying this all the time now.
Yeah, it really was a thing I had to talk about so much. I was like, this is getting hack, okay? I don't want to talk about this anymore. Let's move on, shall we?
Did you feel like you had to talk about it all the time?
Not all the time. I mean, I had to talk about it for at least a month when people asked where I'd been, how am I doing? Like with any sort of grief, any sort of like painful, traumatic experience, when people ask you how you're doing, it's hard not to be honest.
Yeah.
I think that's what people were going through or have been going through with COVID, is when somebody asks you how you doing, do you really want to say, all right,
I'm fine. I'm doing great.
Because you're not fine. Nobody's fine. We're all kind of like muddling through it. But yeah, after my father died and people asked me like, how you doing? I'm like, oh, I don't know. My dad's dead. What do you think I'm, how do you think I'm doing?
Yeah.
Bad.
Not good.
Yeah, what do you want me to say? But I wouldn't scream at people. I would just be like, yeah, I mean, I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
Doing my best. That's all I could do. My best.
I feel like those conversations, especially with like acquaintance level people, they can be irritating. Like, I mean, I remember after my son died, people being like, you know, a random person when I started to reintegrate into society, being like, how you doing? Be like, and having to do the flow chart in your head of like, if I tell you how I'm doing, what is the next conversation that I have to have with you? Is it better to just be like, you know what, man? I'm doing fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And then let that person walk away.
Yeah, how much do you care about unburdening yourself to this human being? Like, you have to choose. Like, who really needs to know who I actually am? And so when I would go on dates after this, I would have to kind of do the math in my head. And again, I'm terrible at math, so I was terrible at dating for a while. But the mental math of, do I want this person to know the real me? Or do I want this person to assume that I'm just a regular cool guy?
Right.
And I would often pick that I wanted them to think I'm a regular cool guy, and that was a mistake.
Yeah, well, because very hard to, I feel like, I would imagine on a first date, especially if your dad has passed very recently, that if you don't say that your dad has recently died, you're like, the rest of this is all kind of bullshit. all the rest of this is kind of going to be phony then, because I'm never going to tell you.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, you kind of have to just like decide early, do you want to even be on a date with this person? Do I like this person enough just from the first 10 minutes to tell them my sob story about my dad being dead?
Yeah, and also like to help them process it. Like not even just, I'm going to unburden you, so you're going to have to get to know me in a way that I don't even know myself. And also, I'm going to have to work through how you feel about this, and I'm not even sure that I want to do that.
Yeah. How much do I want to see you make that face? You know, sorry you can't see it on the podcast, but just going, oh, I'm so sorry, Dave.
But yeah, it's what I would describe as like calligraphy voice. It's like your everything shifts. It's like tiptoes. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, you like turn into a greeting card from Papyrus.
Yeah, exactly.
Like whatever like trite sayings you can come up with. Well, you know, everybody dies and life goes on, and I'm sure he's thinking about you in heaven and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, God only gives you what you can handle, and then you open the card up and there's nothing inside.
This is what I can handle. Nothing.
You said that you went home. We see the friend, we get in the car, we drive back to Merced.
Mm-hmm. My father's best friend came up to San Francisco to pick me up. Flip Hassett. My dad's best friend, golfing buddy. Yeah, he's passed away recently.
That is central.
He looked Looked like a guy at Mar-a-Lago, not a Republican. My dad was a very staunch liberal.
Okay. Well, listen, we welcome all kinds here at A Good Cry. I mean, you know, mostly. Not all kinds. Okay, well, only a few people, but...
I don't.
Only one person's allowed to listen to this podcast. The flip hasset I was going to say is... That is central casting for Dad's Best Friend.
Absolutely.
Like if you saw a movie and you saw Dad's Best Friend in it and you had to guess what that character's name was, one of your first three guesses is going to be Flip Hassett.
Yep. And this was this is a name that I couldn't not share. I was like, how many names should I throw out on this podcast? I got to share this one.
We got to put Flip in the mix.
Yeah.
Did you like Flip?
Yeah, he was cool. He was a very nice man. Very involved in local politics and very generous.
That's cool.
Yeah, nice guy. Yeah. I didn't want to spend 2 hours in the car with him talking about my fucking dad being dead, but sure, it was fine.
But did you? Is that what you did, or did you just sit there silently?
Yeah. What else were we going to talk about?
I feel like my dad has just died is prime. Could you just turn the radio up all the way? I'm going to put my hood over my head and we'll talk when I get home.
Yeah, we turn the radio on and Cat Stevens comes on some...
Oh, no.
Some song like, and the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. I just start crying.
Every song is a dad song. Yeah. Every single song is a dad song. And you got home, all the siblings are there.
Yeah, well, not yet. No, this was the day it happened.
Not yet, but everyone's arriving.
Yeah, people are starting to make their plans and stuff.
And... what do you remember whirlwind of that time? Like you stayed home for a week. So the funeral happened pretty, like everybody gets home. We have a funeral the next day or something.
Yeah. So, my mother is Jewish. And, so my father, even though he was raised Lutheran, had a Jewish funeral. There's a rule where like, if the rabbi in your community deems that you have lived a Jewish life, you can have a Jewish funeral and be buried in a Jewish cemetery. So that was my mother's choice.
Live the Jewish life. Is that a religious thing or like just...
You have to be Jewish to be in a Jewish cemetery.
Gotcha.
Unless there is some kind of like dispensation. I think this first came up for Oscar Schindler.
Wow.
Of Schindler's List fame.
Yeah. The famous Oscar Schindler.
He's buried in a Jewish cemetery in Israel. So they made a kind of a rule that you could do that if people felt it appropriate.
Wow, so...
You got to have a funeral in 4 days, I believe. I think it's 4 days. So we had it pretty quick because of that.
And are we... I should know this. I'm also half Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And I was bar mitzvah, but I don't know.
Lucky guy.
Lucky guy.
No wonder you're such a success.
But I don't know really anything about... I don't know anything about it. I don't, even though I was bar mitzvah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
So you are... Are you sitting with a body? Is it that kind of situation? Like, are we sitting Shiva in the home?
Absolutely. I mean, you don't sit with a body. You don't even see it. You put it in a pine box. And
okay.
You...
Don't say it like I'm so stupid.
Sorry.
You just said it like I was the dumbest person you've ever talked to.
Well, no. This is, I think, important because this is part of my experience was my Lutheran family on my dad's side wanted to see him. And they asked very nicely, or if you asked my mother not very nicely, to be able to see him. And I didn't. I said, this is not our tradition. We don't look at the body. I don't want to see him anyway. Like, he's not him anymore. He's just some parts. So that was contentious. My mother was really perturbed about my dad's family the entire week. It's just like a simple pine box. You don't get any frills or anything. And then they just put you in there. And then, you sit Shiva for however many days, I forget. And people come over and they bring food and commiserate and stuff.
Was any of that nice? Did you like any part? I mean, obviously your father's died, so that part is bad. But I mean, like, I'm gonna assume that.
What about this experience did you enjoy? Let's see. I don't know. I got to give a speech. That was fun. The food was good.
I guess what I mean is...
People complimented my outfit. Got a lot of attention. So much attention. I mean, as someone who craves it, it was one of the best days of my life.
I mean, like, there are some things that can't... Come on. Some things can be nice about communal grief.
I know. I've just...
You asshole.
I'm riffing. Yes.
Oops, all riffs.
Yes, absolutely. I think the sense of community, the sense of knowing people cared, Someone mysteriously paid for the entire funeral. We still don't know who it was.
You still don't know?
We have guesses. My mom was going to like, my mom called the funeral home and they said, someone's paid for this already.
Wow. This isn't even my deal. And now like, I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah.
Because I've heard of that kind of thing.
My dad was a prick too.
No. Was he?
I don't know why anyone would be like, let me get.
Prickly?
Yeah. He was just kind of like a surly old man. Yeah. He was difficult.
Oh. That's my favorite kind of old man. I love a difficult old man because you know what? I always think of myself as the one that they're gonna like. He's gonna like me. Just you wait. He's gonna like me.
That was how me and my brother were. We're gonna get him to like us, and it was a constant battle of who was his favorite.
And yeah, did either of you ever feel like you were winning that one?
Oh, I think I won all the time. I think I was always winning.
100% of the time.
I had his name. I'm David Wayne Schilling II.
Oh, that's first, middle, and last is all him?
David Wayne Schilling II. Yep.
Wow. Are you the oldest of... you're the oldest of the...
Of the two from my parents' marriage, yes.
Of the two, but then not of the half. Gotcha.
Yeah, that would have been weird.
Not really sure.
If I was older than my half siblings.
Yeah, it'd be like a looper situation.
What? Yeah. My parents went back in time and had sex.
I went back in time to have more older kids is what I did.
Yeah, you could go kill Hitler or like warn people about COVID or stop 9/11. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have sex with my wife before she was old.
Before.
Yeah, when she was nice and tight.
Yeah, that's what a lovely, and it's such a lovely story.
Sorry, that's so disgusting.
Saying
my mother is nice and tight. Oh, she's.
We're cutting everything out. We're cutting everything out except for that part. The whole podcast is just gonna be that on a loop.
Okay, they put that in like a trailer
because that's what people tune into grief podcasts for. That exact sentence. That's what they want to hear.
Yeah, I know that. That's why I said it.
Do you have any like funny memories from? Like funerals can also be like a total disaster in terms of like people saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. Do you remember any? Grief hijinks. It's okay if you don't.
Not really. I don't remember it being a very funny time. I'm trying to think about like, and this is not a glib answer. I'm just saying like I was so wrecked by it that I can't remember anything amusing about it. I remember my speech, and that I said, if he was here, he'd be miserable, and he didn't particularly like any of you, but I appreciate you coming. That was it.
That's pretty funny.
People were like, wow, that speech, that was a joke, right? No.
No, sir. It was not you specifically.
No, that was the most sincere thing anybody said today. Yeah, he hated you and you and you. Grievances with all of you.
Yeah. If you have time, if anyone wants to come talk to me after the speech, I'll tell you individually the reasons my dad did not like you.
I'll sign some 8x10s and I'll tell you why he hated you.
That's pretty funny. Even if it's true.
That's funny, yeah.
You know that's funny when you're saying it. That's a funny thing to say.
Absolutely, yeah. I think I got a kick out of being honest about it.
Out of roasting the crowd?
Because we could never be honest. Yeah, we could never be honest about him or with him. So being able to do that once he was gone, was very liberating.
It is like,
No,
I don't want to cut you off. Keep going.
We're very rarely honest about the people that we love. We make excuses for them. We turn a blind eye to the things that are bad about them, especially with parents. You know, we hold them up, put them up on a pedestal. Oh, this is my dad. This is my mom. These are important people. They're infallible, or they're all good or all bad or whatever. But once he died, I could be kind of really introspective about it and think about who he actually was as a person instead of as a father, you know? He was a difficult person, and we found out a few years ago that he had had an affair. He was having an affair before he died.
You just found this out a few years ago? A
couple years ago, yeah.
Oh, wow.
My mom was like, I got to tell you something. Your father was having an affair before he died.
How did she find that out?
Somebody told her at work.
Why?
Someone was just like, Mary, I think you need to know something about blah, blah, blah.
But she doesn't need to know that. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to speak for anybody. It just feels like one of those things. It's like, why would you need to know that? He's been dead.
But because it's liberating, I think, to know a person for real, especially a parent, to be able to come to grips with them as an actual person versus a parent. You know, the parent-child relationship is very fraught, and there comes a point where you sort of are more important to the relationship, and that you're kind of taking care of them. You know, my mother, like, I have to remind her to take pills, or like, you know, wear your mask, Mom, or whatever it is. Like, turn your blinker on when we're driving, or you're gonna get in an accident. And that's weird for them, because they're used to having some sort of power arrangement in the relationship. But it's weird for me. But I have to remind myself, my mom is just a person, because I'm a parent now. I have a 4-year-old, and I know how important I am to him, because I see it. I see how he talks about me, how he looks at me, how excited he is when I come over to his mother's house and stuff, and when he stays in my house, because we're divorced. That's another grief thing we could talk about, is getting divorced.
Yeah.
I have a funny story about that we'll get to eventually, I'm sure. But now that I'm a parent, I know how it feels to be a parent. And it reminds me how I felt about my parents. And so knowing my father was having an affair, it's like, oh, okay, that's who he really was. I don't like secrets, and I try not to have them with my son. And, you know, within reason, he's 4, so I can't tell him, like, everything. But my plan is to try to be candid about who I am and about my flaws, and not make him think like I'm perfect.
Yeah. I think I have a kid who is, I mean, my son who died has a twin brother who survived, who is 12. Mm-hmm. So we're, like, getting into that area where my flaws are going to become more and more apparent. So I am kind of trying to put a parachute on him to, like, kind of gently float him down into like what a garbage person I am. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like, I know you have thought of me like this. Just as you get older, you will start to see, like, I'm not the athlete you thought I was when you were 4. Mm. Like, when you were 4.
I'm not that strong.
I'm actually, yeah, when you meet your...
My son has said, Dad, you're so strong. You carried those bags of groceries. And I'm like, son, I feel horrible. My back hurts all the time.
Yeah, you will realize when you start to meet other adults that your father is not a strong person.
No, mentally or physically.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
But to talk about the affair, was that a second? That could feel like a second grief also. Like, the way you're presenting it is more of like a revelation. But I could see that being like, here's a person who's died, and now here's another layer to the, you know, whatever feelings you might have, anger, sadness, relief, whatever they are.
I stopped being mad about him.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I was mad.
Sure.
Well, the reason why he died is he stopped taking his heart medication. So in my head, and I think my mother and my brother agree, he killed himself. He wanted to die.
You think it was, you think that he wanted to? It wasn't like...
Or he was self-sabotaging in some way. Maybe he didn't realize he was going to die.
Got it.
But he made a conscious decision to not take medication.
Yeah.
The medication he needed to regulate his heart, which is something that is a problem in our family. My grandfather died in his 50s of a heart attack. He was drinking whiskey in the bathroom and fell over.
Wow.
So that I've got that to look forward to. Yeah. So he chose that. You know, he could have kept taking his medication. He could have been here longer, and he kind of chose not to. And I was mad about that for a long time, but I don't see the reason to be mad, because I'm a parent and I make selfish decisions all the time. I make plenty of them. I try not to, but I'm still human. And he made a decision that was purely self-interested. I wouldn't want to be that parent, you know. I try not to be, but I still do things that I know I probably shouldn't do. You know, I'm still going to sneak a cigarette every once in a while or eat a cheeseburger. And I don't exercise enough. And those are choices that I make selfishly when I should be taking care of myself.
Yeah, but those things aren't so bad. I thought you were going to be like, you know, from time to time, I'm going to rob a bank.
Yeah, I went to the Capitol on January 6th, and I am currently indicted for trespassing.
And I did that for me. That was just for me.
Yeah, it felt good. Sometimes you got to just go out for a trip. Take a trip, you know, treat yourself.
You were saying in terms of the anger that you sort of presented it two ways. One was that logically, what's the value in being mad? What does that get me? Mm-hmm. And the other one was more like, oh, I see things maybe from the dad point of view that I wouldn't have seen when I was a kid. I would have, like, I thought of my dad as, like, you know, being this paragon, maybe not, but like in general, people think of their dads, I think, as like paragons of virtue and chivalry and whatever else.
Yeah.
And becoming a dad yourself stripped that away for you.
Yeah. You think of them as a role model. And I know my son thinks of me as a role model and he looks up to me right now. But the more you find out about people, the less you have to rely on them for that role model status. Or the less you should, at least. And as you get older, you know, you develop your own sense of self, and you don't need somebody to be a role model for you. Hopefully. I mean, that's what growing up is about, is developing your own identity. So, you know, I'm in my 30s now, and I don't know why I would need my father to be a role model anymore. He's a person who made choices.
In that way, does the finding out about the affair make him like more of a person? Like almost...
It's very humanizing, yeah.
And does that... I mean, again, this is sounding like a preposterous question, but does that feel good in any way? To be like, I was right. He is a person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, that is an impulse that I think a lot of people have, not just men, not just, you know, anybody, to kind of step outside of the bounds of the relationship that you're in. And yeah, you know, I've certainly cheated on people before. I'm not doing that now, but I have in the past. And not with my girlfriend, but, you know, not with my wife either. But prior to that, prior to those relationships, yeah, I certainly did. And I understood or understand the impulse behind that, you know, that kind of feeling of being alone. And I think he felt alone a lot. My mother and father were not really affectionate. They weren't really in love. They were together out of necessity. They needed to be together because they were both single parents. And my father had a stable job in the Air Force. So they got together out of convenience. I never saw them kiss. I never saw them, you know, affectionate with each other. I heard them have sex once and it was the worst day of my life. I came out to make coffee and I hear these grunting noises, and I'm going to say it, ball slapping noises.
No, you didn't hear the slapping of the... You couldn't have.
I absolutely
did.
Oh,
my God.
Nope, I didn't.
You have incredible hearing.
And so then I went back into my room and I waited for them to come out. And then I came out and I said, well, guys, I hope you had a good time. And they went, oh!
No, you called them out.
Yeah, of course I did. I was old enough at that point. I was in, like, I think I was home from college. I was like, yeah, okay, well, I'm glad they all still work down there. And that was the only time I really felt like they had any sort of interest in each other.
Wow. Well, what a story.
You're welcome.
Do you thank you for putting the vision of your parents, who I've never met, in my own mind. I think it's, you know, and I think it's wonderful.
I hope they're sexy in your mind.
Yeah, in my mind, your parents are hot.
Thank you.
The one other thing about the way you described the affair is that, you know, you said that you've stepped out or whatever in previous relationships. So do you think it's at all possible that finding out about this thing about your dad makes you feel less alone? Like, maybe you didn't feel any guilt over doing those things, but if you did, I could see being like, oh,
of course I did.
If you did, I could see finding out that your dad had also done it, for whatever it does to alter your perception of him, to also make you feel less alone in this thing, that it's like, I'm not the only person on earth who's ever done this.
Yeah. I don't know if I felt alone just because a lot of people do it. It's
right. Sure. Okay.
A lot of drama is built around these sorts of deceptions. I felt more like a sense of, I guess, understanding. I related to it. And it made me think about why I have those feelings. Because my father was not alone. He had quite a few people in his life who cared about him.
Right.
But he perceived that he was alone.
Yeah.
He felt like he was alone because he was unwilling to be vulnerable around the people who cared about him. If it was my mother, if it was my brother, me, his kids from his first marriage, my mother's son from her first marriage, all of these people, the people at the funeral, all loved my father. He hated them. If he had just felt that affection from everyone else, he wouldn't have cheated on my mother.
That is, I mean, such a huge distinction, that difference between, I'm trying to think of the play that it's in also. I want to say like Hurley Burley or something, but the character says something like, I know she loves me, but I don't feel that she loves me. And it's like, those things are not necessarily the same. And the thing you're saying about like being open to feeling that love requires being vulnerable, like being truthful.
Yes.
And that can be hard.
But you have to learn that in therapy if you didn't learn it when you were a child. And my grandmother, Doris, was not a very loving person. My grandfather, Roy, who I never met because he died, I think, before I was even born. He was not very loving. He was emotionally not abusive. I don't know if my mother would say it was abuse, but certainly withholding. And so my dad never learned how to be a receptacle for love, right?
Yeah.
Because he never felt safe in his home environment. So he didn't know how to reach out to people or to expect love from people. So you could love him as much as you wanted to. He didn't believe it because he'd never experienced it before. He didn't know how to let his guard down because he was understandably paranoid about what people would think about who he really was, because he was, you know, kind of not given that opportunity by his parents.
Well, that's just very thoughtful talk, Dave. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you feel like, I mean, you've talked about this to some degree already, but do you feel like the way in which you have processed the loss of your father has changed you as a person, from like who you are? Obviously, you have so many life experiences since that happened.
Yeah.
But do you think the loss of your father has affected who you are as a person in a significant way?
Yeah. It's made me more introspective, made me more aware of my feelings, and it made me a better dad. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, how so?
I see the things that he did wrong. I see how damaging it was for me for him to be absent from my life in that period of time. And I think about all the things that he didn't offer, all the things I can't say to him, all the things I can't ask him to do for me, you know, in terms of my emotional growth. And I say, I'm not going to repeat those mistakes. I'm going to be around to do that stuff for my son. So I try as much as I can to be there for him. And one of the reasons why I got divorced is because I saw how miserable my parents were. and how it affected me and my brother. And my mother finally admitted a few years ago, like she said she was incredibly depressed most of the time I was alive. It's like, yeah, for about 20 years, I was significantly clinically depressed. And I was like, well, that sucks.
Wow. And did she learn that? She learned that through therapy of some kind, or she like came to it on her own?
Yeah. A combination of the two. They tried couples counseling and stuff. My dad was very against it. And so when I started to see the trust of my relationship or the bedrocks of my relationship with my wife at the time kind of falling apart, we had a 6-month-old child. I said, we're not going to fight in front of him. I don't want that. I don't think you want that. If this isn't working and we can't make it work, let's get out. I wish my parents had gotten divorced because they would have been happier. And both me and my ex-wife are significantly happier now that we've come to terms with the fact that our relationship wasn't working. My son is happier. I'm happier. She's happier. It's just, yeah, like I learned from my father passing away and the honesty that my mother could have, my brother could have about him, that I shouldn't be in a bad marriage. I shouldn't do it. The funniest thing, not funny, but the most interesting thing about my divorce, which I was alluding to earlier, is that my divorce was finalized on the 13th anniversary of my father dying, the very same day, February 9th.
I mean, that's a lot to be a coincidence. There's so many days in the year.
It was a coincidence, but yeah.
I mean, it's amazing that you can take... It sounds like you're a good student of the grief. You know what I mean? Like you have learned good lessons from it. Because I think another way is to become more emotionally shut down and more like the things about the relationship with your father that you didn't like, to embody those things more.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that you didn't do that. That instead you're like, how can I be better from this? And applying that to a divorce too, which is something I don't think I've ever talked about divorce on this podcast to this point, but I think most people think of it as super bad.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are ways in which it's very difficult and bad, but also...
It's horrible. That's a grief experience.
Yeah.
Because your relationship, a connection is dead. It's been severed, and it's really painful. It's like pulling out a big splinter from your finger.
Right. And you're like, the splinter was...
My ex-wife.
The splinter was a human person.
Yeah.
Man, she's stuck in there. But I wanted to say the other thing that you were getting at, which is that the divorce, it seems like, was good. It was the thing that should have happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I probably shouldn't have gotten married to her. And I'm sure she would agree if she, for some reason, listened to this. But we always say, and this is true, we got the best kid of all time out of the deal. And that's pretty, pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say that, but my kids are better. I don't even want to fight about it.
I don't mean the best of all time. I just mean, like, he's great. He's a cool kid.
Okay.
I'm very lucky. He's wonderful. I know your kids are wonderful, too. We don't have to fight about this on the air. Right?
So just to talk about the grief experience of the divorce, mm-hmm. How – I don't even know where to start with that. Like how do you – because you're intertwined in so many ways. How do you – what – is there an event that happens that you go, okay, this requires an untangling of our whole lives? Or is it just an accumulation of moments?
I mean, out of respect for my ex-wife, I'm not going to say everything that happened, but we had an argument about, me leaving for work during a period of time when she was going to be home alone with our child. But I had to go to work. I had to go to New Orleans, of all places, to have a good time. It wasn't a good time because I was, as soon as I landed, I was like, oh, I guess I'm getting divorced. We had a conversation. We talked about some things that could change, one person didn't want to change those things. And I said, let's just get divorced. And that was hard, but it was the choice that needed to be made. And then there's we had to sell our house. We had to divvy up all of our things. I stayed in the house for a month to sell it. I had the responsibility of being in our home and selling our house.
Wow.
That was not fun. Then you kind of figure out which of your couple friends are going to side with you and which ones are going to side with the other person. And that's always interesting to see who sticks around and who is like, I like that. I honestly don't like you that much. I don't care about you. And not so many words, but it's just like, oh, that person stopped liking all my Instagram photos, or I didn't get invited to that party. All right, fine.
How long were the two of you together for, all in?
All in 6 years.
Wow.
We got engaged after our first year. We got married after our second year. And then the third year when we bought the house, and the fourth year of the kid. I'm not even going to try to figure it out, but around 5 or 6 years. Yeah, so it wasn't a terrible long time, but it was long enough. And I have a habit of moving quickly in relationships anyway. So we had a whole thing to pull apart. We had to split up our bank accounts, and we got a mediator. So we're going through all of the things, and I'm showing my bank statements and stuff. This is before OnlyFans, thank God. I'm not on OnlyFans all the time. That's a joke.
look, it's fine if you want. We're sponsored by OnlyFans. This is OnlyFans' favorite podcast.
Oh God, really? Yeah, so that was just really hard. It was really hard to have somebody that you did love at one point kind of hate you now. And there was just this animosity and this black cloud over everything. And eventually we just, you know, had this series of conversations about how not to make a toxic environment for our son. And now we're good friends.
That's great.
I wouldn't say we're super close, but we text all the time, and you know, I get her presents for her birthday and stuff, and yeah, it's really easy to co-parent right now, and I'm very, very grateful for that. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But it could have been another like it was a grief moment the first year or two, and I was miserable. I was drinking too much and just really sad, dating the wrong kinds of women, and I was unemployed for a while, so it was hard to not be able to, like, pay her child support every month. But she was very understanding about that. And, yeah, I'm very, very fortunate that it ended up being a good thing and not a regret. It's not a regret for me. I'm sad sometimes still. I look back at our photos of our wedding, and I'll see things that we... like stuff in a closet. I'm like, oh, that's from when we did this thing. And I'll text her about it, and we'll kind of laugh and have fond memories of it. And yeah, it's not negative feelings. It's just kind of nostalgia. So that's good. That's a good thing.
That, that dating after you've been divorced sounds like it would be similar in some ways to the dating after your father has died, where it's like, how quickly on a date are you like, okay, and also I have just been divorced, by the way.
This, I was at a party. It was the first time I went out after it happened. My friend's birthday party. And it was this girl that I knew. I met at a party before, and she kind of knew other people that I knew. And we talked because her father had died, and so we would commiserate about, you know, shared grief experiences and stuff. And she asked me, how are you doing? What's to do when we're at this big party and outside at these tables? And I said, well, I just got divorced. And her response was, so does that mean you're available? And I said, well, maybe eventually, we'll see. And then I had enough to drink that we just started making out. And then I dated her for like 6 months, and it was terrible. But I was not in a place to like date somebody.
Yeah.
I really wasn't. And I was trying so much to rebuild my life by replacing my ex-wife with somebody else. And that was not a good idea.
That makes a lot of sense to have, like, I mean, I haven't been divorced, but having had breakups from long-term relationships, that feeling of, like, the negative space that is there now to be like, just put anything in it. Any person can just be there. Yeah, just...
I don't care who it is. Let's just go. The first person who said, you're cute. All right, well, I guess you're my girlfriend now.
Yeah, I love you then.
Yeah. Horrible idea.
Is there... I'm sure I have people who listen to this podcast who are going through, have gone through, are thinking about going through divorce. I mean, obviously you can't speak for anyone but yourself, or maybe you can. You seem very wise. But if
I can speak for whoever I want. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Who, if you could go back and say something to yourself while you were going through like the worst part of that, what would you tell that Dave?
Don't change anything. Just do what you're doing. Because I wouldn't be the person I am today if I didn't suffer and struggle and go through all of those experiences. And I like who I am. It would be foolish to say I wish I had done anything differently.
Oh, I love that answer.
And I feel like that's kind of, there's some cliches in there. I feel it's kind of like trite.
Sure.
But it's true. Why would I mean, I'm not, you know, someone I'm not proud of. I like who I am, even the things about me that are kind of strange or that are like, I wish I didn't do that. I wish I knew that. I'm still glad that I'm me because I could be somebody else and that wouldn't be any fun.
Yeah, I mean, I just love the answer. I would go back to that person and be like, oof, Dave, it's going to be bad for a while. Oh, a lot of bad stuff coming up for you, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to, I wouldn't say that.
Okay, all right.
Because I had a lot of good things that happened.
Right, sure.
I've done some things I'm super proud of, like my career, I think I'm very proud of. My relationship now, I'm so happy. Why would I want that to be different?
And in terms of the divorce also is distinct from death in a lot of ways, obviously, but one of them is, I mean, maybe your situation is different, but there's not usually a funeral for a marriage. Like, there's no event that is like...
Yeah, you can't have a wake. You should. People should.
They should do that.
There's got to be some catharsis for it.
Yeah, but there's...
And we had to have a lot of crying conversation, like tearful conversations to exercise it all.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a party. We should have had a party. But we were mad at each other. Like, that's the problem. It's like... You're mad.
Hard to throw a party with someone you hate.
You hate that person in the moment. Like, I can't stand you. Why are you here? Get out of my life. I asked you legally to get out of my life. Go away.
Yeah, this piece of paper says you have to get out of my life. Mm-hmm. The ritual also helps you, like, have some sense of, like, closure and purging, and everybody's there so everybody knows, but not having that just seems like it would be much harder to fade out than it is to be like, done. This is my father is dead. He is no longer alive, as opposed to the divorce, which is like the marriage is over, but I still see you from time to time. And we talk, like, where is the end? Like, you know, when is the moment, assuming you wore a wedding ring, that you're like, and the ring is off?
Oh, I took it off on the plane to New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
So you didn't wear it for a day. And then I put it back on.
Like a trial run of how it felt to not be wearing it.
Yeah.
And did it feel like weird or creepy or exciting or?
I felt mad.
Got it.
All I felt was anger at that point. Because I had felt betrayed. I won't go into any more detail about that, but I felt betrayed.
And it sounds like you have processed those feelings in a way that has brought you to... like an understanding and a renewed but probably different love for your ex-wife, right? Like a different...
Yeah, absolutely. I do love her still because she's the mother of my child and she worked incredibly hard to take care of him. And she loves him very much. And I think one of the reasons why we have such a good relationship now is because we have a shared purpose. We were individuals in a marriage at the time, but we didn't really have a shared purpose yet. It came later that we realized we have a shared purpose, but we couldn't embark on that mission without without getting away from each other. It was the act of living together every day that drove us to do this, to get to split up. Like, we couldn't be together. But now we can do this thing of raising our child because we're both happy.
Yeah.
And that shared purpose is why we can be friends. I think if we didn't have a kid and we just got divorced, we'd probably never see each other again. Unless it was like, oh, we're both the same party because we have mutual friends still. But I don't think I would be like, well, let me hang out with my ex-wife. I almost said her name. I don't want to do that.
That's fine. If you did, we would edit it right out.
Sure. But anyway, yeah. I was just like, I don't want to see you if I don't have to, but I have to. And then I was able to develop an appreciation for her as a human being again because of that necessity of seeing her. And I could feel empathy for her situation. Whereas when we were in the moment, I was just so mad that I was just like, what about me?
Right.
Take care of me. I need people to take care of me. And you're not doing that. But now we can see each other as people again, which is nice.
Yeah, and also because, as you say, you're not relying on her to be the one to take care of you now. So it's like, if she's not taking care of you, that's fine. She's not supposed
to. Now I make my girlfriend take care of me. Hallie, bring me some more tea.
I've developed a different dependency.
yes.
You referred to divorce as a grief moment, like that time as being a time of grief.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any similarity to you or relationship between the kind of grief you felt at your father's death and the kind of grief you felt when your marriage was ending?
It was anger both times, initially. Yeah, just being mad. Mad at that person for the choices that they made. And in both cases, I came to terms with their flaws and with my own, too. You know, I had a part to play in both of those relationships being kind of negative, even with my father. Yeah, honestly, like, I probably could have been a better son. The day or the week before he died, my mom called, and not a big phone call guy. David Wade Schilling Sr. didn't like talking on the phone. And my mom said to him, hey, David, do you want to talk to Lil D? And he called me Lil D. And like, yeah, sure. You coming over for the Super Bowl? The Super Bowl is in February, of course. I can't. I got a party I'm going to go to here. You know, I was in college, so I was trying to have a good time, meet people and stuff. And then we hung up, and that was the last time we talked. I probably should have gone home. I probably shouldn't have been so selfish about that.
I mean, that's a tough one, though. It's...
That's my one regret, is like, I wish I'd seen him one more time.
I mean, that, the idea of, maybe I'm misinterpreting you, the idea of wishing you had seen him one more time, that makes complete sense to me. The thing that I would hesitate to say push back on, but would push back on a little bit, is whether that's very normal father-son behavior to be like,
yeah.
Hey, come on to the, you know, we're having the family reunion, and being like, oh, I'm going to stay here and play Mario Brothers instead of doing that, because you don't think that the person is going to die, which is a fair thing to think. He's never died before. He hasn't died any other times. You know what I mean? He's on a long streak of not dying.
But I think that's kind of why I regret it, is because I wasn't thinking about the fact that he was going to die.
Right.
And I try to see my mother as much as possible and talk to her on the phone and take advantage of her longevity, you know? I think you have to look at every person in your life that you care about as mortal. And when you're younger, you don't really think about death. You can't process it because it seems so far away. But we're all this close.
Yeah.
One thing could happen and it's all over.
I've said this on this podcast before, but it's very, like, the being alive part of this is so short.
Yep.
You were non-existent and you will be dead for so much longer than you were alive. I mean, probably. I guess, you know, I don't know what all the things are. Maybe you come back. You might come back. I could be wrong. You could come back.
Not looking forward to finding out.
speaking of coming back, a question that we ask on the pod is, do you think of your dad as someplace now? Is there somewhere that you put him, or do you communicate with him in any way?
No, he's dead.
I don't mean like seances. I mean, are you ever like...
No, I know.
Okay, great.
I don't go... I went one time to where he's buried in Fresno. And I think maybe twice, actually. I don't talk to the thing. I don't go to sleep, you know, saying a benediction to him or something. Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel his presence. Because he wasn't the kind of person who believed in that stuff. He wasn't the kind of person who talked to his father or thought about his father being somewhere or something. So I just don't know. But I think about him, you know. I think about the memories that I have. I think about what he would have done as a parent in a situation, and I do the opposite.
Burn!
But yeah, no, I don't feel the need to talk to him, no. Because he wasn't a good person to talk to when he was alive.
Yeah.
I didn't have that kind of relationship with him where I could go to him with my problems. He didn't care. I mean, I don't know if he didn't care, but he wasn't like, oh, I gotta fix this. It's like, can you talk to your mom about this? I don't know.
This one seems tough.
I don't understand this stuff. Yeah, it's like I had girl problems or something. He'd be like, I got married at 18. I don't know. I can't help you, dude.
You said you went to...
You lost his virginity and got a woman pregnant.
In the same shot.
First time at that. Yeah.
You said that you went to his, where he's buried in Fresno twice. Was that, why did you go? You went like with family or...
My mother and my girlfriend at the time who knew him, she was like my high school crush, and we finally started dating after my dad died, and she came to pay her respects.
Gotcha.
Yeah. She dumped me. I still hate her.
Ooh, it's tough. It's very hard to dump someone after their father. Like, if you get together with someone during a traumatic time.
Oh, yeah. That was messed up.
It is tough to be like, because there are already so many times when you can't break up with people. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's Valentine's Day. I can't. Yeah. Here comes, you know, St. Patrick's Day. We can't break up for St. Patrick's Day. Well, after the father dies, you're like,
we broke up like a year after my dad died.
Yeah, well, you're locked like, in you for a year.
What are you doing? I'm a mess right now. And you're like, I gotta go. So we never speak. We will see each other periodically because our parents are friends still.
Oh, wow.
But we haven't spoken a word to each other in a decade since then.
Wow.
At least probably 15 years now. Oh, boy, I saw her at a party, and it was weird. It was really weird. We're literally in a group of people, and people are talking. She's looking at me. I'm looking at her, and it's like, well, I guess we're not going to talk.
Yeah.
This is just... It's been how long since we broke up? What the hell is wrong with you? Anyway, this is a tangent.
That's okay. This is what we're talking. This is about that relationship now.
I just wanted to get that off my chest that I hate this person still. I'm not all good. I'm not a nice person all the time. Some people I still do hate.
It's too late, Dave. I idolize you. It's too late.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Dave, that was the podcast. We did it.
It's over?
This is it. Do you have anything, any last words? Anything else you want to toss in the pod?
All things end. Appreciate people while you can, because they will die. That is a fact. So that was my whole point about, like, you know, I wish I'd gone to that Super Bowl party. If you care about somebody, make an effort, because they might not be here soon.
Damn, I was just saying that as a joke, and you came out with some, like... Confucius level shit.
Well, this is a serious podcast. Like, right? Kinda?
Sort of. Still unclear. This was another episode of A Good Cry. That was Dave Schilling. Thanks for listening, and I hope it helps. Oh, hi there. It's Michael Cruz Kane again. Just asking you kindly if you wouldn't mind rating, subscribing, reviewing, sharing, listening, printing out the transcript of the podcast and reading it out loud on the street. I would really appreciate it. It helps the podcast grow. And if you enjoy it, I'd love other people to enjoy it. Thanks so much, and catch you next week on A Good Cry. Bye. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum podcast.